This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. This Friday marks the 20th anniversary of Fresh Air as a national daily show on NPR. The rest of this week, we'll be commemorating that anniversary by diving deeply back into our archives. Today, we dive as deeply as we can to 1987, our very first year, and present interviews with two comedians, Jerry Seinfeld and Jackie Mason. Then we snap back to the present with Terry's new interview with Jack Vertel, artistic director of the New York City Center Encores series. Let's start with the past. Perhaps the neatest thing about Terry's 1987 interview with Jerry Seinfeld is that it takes place 2 years before he landed the NBC series Seinfeld. The occasion was his first stand-up comedy special on HBO, where his act included observational humor about subjects like growing up on Long Island and being dragged along by his mother on a shopping trip to buy wallpaper.
You know when you get bored, your feet just kind of start to drag and you just... Mom, can we get out of here already, please? Mom, come on, let's go. They don't have him. The guy talked to the other guy. They don't. No, I don't think they're in the back. I don't even think they have a back here. Let's just get out of here, all right? Of course, when you're a little kid and you get bored, you can't support your body weight at all. You have to really just lie down wherever you are. Your parents, they take you to the bank. That was the classic one. My parents take me to the bank, they turn around from the teller, and I was just flat out on the floor, just can't make it, Mom. And they get so upset, would you get up off the floor, please? Get up! I can't get up, Mom. It's too dull in here.
This is a time when a lot of comics with crazy personas are making it big. People like Emo and Bob Goldthwait. And you come on like a nice middle-class guy in a suit. Do you consider that your comic persona? Or is that you?
It's me. Well, that's the only way I could do it every night. I don't know how these people have the energy to concoct a personality and maintain it week in and week out. I would find that exhausting.
Do you think it's a trap in a way that persona can become a kind of prison you can't get out of?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, what happens when you decide you want to talk about something else? I mean, if it falls in the category of something I'm interested in, I can talk about it. You know, it doesn't have to fit anything. It just has to be me.
When you were getting started, did you ever try on more zany personalities in order to get laughs?
When you're starting, you don't know what the hell you're doing. I mean, when I was starting, it was 1976, and the elections were on. And I remember I had a line about Scoop Jackson that I thought he sounded like the Baskin-Robbins counterman of the week. And I remember that was one of my big jokes. And I had a joke about, what else did I have? I had a joke about the tramway here in New York being the first ride, that the city was going bankrupt and that they're putting up rides for us and that eventually we'll be seeing like roller coasters in the South Bronx, which would be the first roller coasters where people scream on the flat part of the ride.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, but no, I never had any real personas, no. I always, you know, idolized people like Bill Cosby and people that were just themselves. I mean, I think the idea of a comedian is someone that you relate to. I think comedy star is almost an oxymoron. You don't look up to comedians like you look at Madonna or, you know, Elvis or people like that. They're, you know, those are people from other planets. Comedians are people that you go, people come up to me and talk to me, they just use my first name, or they don't even introduce themselves, they just start talking. And that's how you know you're it's working, you know. That's what you want them to feel about you, that you're just someone they know.
You have a great bit about how bored you were when your mother used to drag you to wallpaper stores to go shopping. What brought back memories like that?
I saw a kid in a store, and I saw that great kid response where you don't think I shouldn't lie down in public. You think, I'm bored, I'm lying down. And the kids just do whatever they want. And they're hilarious to me. But I don't really get it, actually, from seeing kids as much as I actually remember it myself. I remember lying down in the store. I remember begging my mother for a dime so I could sit on a metal horse that vibrates.
I remember all of that stuff, too. I remember how really boring it was to be taken from store to store and to the bank. You're very funny about the bank, about why do people go to banks?
Yeah, and you're so low down, you know, you can't see anything. You know, you just see, like, the price tags hanging off the sleeves of the shirts, and everyone else is enjoying shopping, and you're just looking at all these stanchions and aluminum things that hold everything up. The bank, especially those teller things, I always looked at, what is going on up there, you know? But I remember it. I don't know. I have, like, youth recall, I guess.
When you started doing your material, were you ever worried that your parents would come and hear your act, and they'd be a little insulted? We didn't know he was bored when we took him to the bank.
Yes, I was petrified when they first saw me. Well, also because I wasn't really funny as a kid, and I felt like I was, you know, exposing this alter ego, you know. Plus, here I am getting up on stage and manipulating these people, you know, into laughing. It's a power thing, you know, and it's weird to do it in front of your parents. Because in front of your parents, you always want them to have the power. And then all of a sudden, you get up in this, you know, very controlling situation. I mean, a comedian is basically a very aggressive thing to do. You force people to see things your way so powerfully, they react audibly. They actually, you force them to react, to look at things the way I look at them and laugh at it when I say to.
When you put it in power terms, it becomes a very potentially arrogant thing to say, I'm good enough, I'm going to stand up here and make everybody laugh.
Absolutely.
They can all see it my way.
Yeah.
What made you think that you could do it and that being a stand-up comic wasn't a totally absurd and ridiculous idea?
I didn't think I could do it. I thought this is a totally absurd and ridiculous idea. But that's exactly what I thought. And I said, but I have to try it. I have to try it. Because I thought this is the pinnacle of life to me. If you could do this, you know, if you could stand up on stage and make people laugh, that would be the ultimate accomplishment of my personality. And I just thought laughs, to be working with laughs and jokes all the time, what a fun life that would be.
Are audiences more willing to go along with you after they've seen you on TV?
You get a free 90 seconds when people have seen you on TV and they know who you are. You get up on stage, for the first 90 seconds, I would say, to 3 minutes, they'll laugh at just about anything you say, and then it's right back to where you've always been when you were a complete unknown.
So it doesn't help too much.
No, people don't laugh because they recognize you. You know, they do at first, but they don't. It wears off pretty quick. You know, you've got to be funny every night.
How do you work on your routine? You have some ideas, but you've really got to put it together into a good routine, a good bit.
I get an idea, and I think there's something funny about that, and I don't know what it is at first. This is how my stuff usually works. Like, I saw, you know, like McDonald's having a sign that says 60 billion. And I think, now that's, you know, there's something very funny about that. That a company of that size is still counting every burger. You know, I mean, there's some kind of insecurity there that you're still thinking, how well, are we doing well? We're doing well. Aren't we doing well? Look at how many we've sold, you know. And I don't know, you know, who really cares besides them? And besides which, what is their ultimate goal? You know, if 60 billion is not enough, I mean, do they want cows surrendering, just voluntarily showing up and going, we give up. You've sold so many burgers, we're turning ourselves in. So I don't know. So I look at things, I go, what's funny about that? But like in my show, I talk about Tide being improved. It's a classic kind of joke that I like to do. Now, why would a comedian look at Tide detergent being improved and think that's funny? To me, you know, comedians generally talk about dating or something, but why are they improving Tide? You know, it's just things I have to think about. Does anyone care?
So why are they improving Tide?
It's getting out bloodstains now. And I think if you got a T-shirt with bloodstains on it, maybe laundry isn't your biggest problem. Maybe you ought to get rid of the body first before you do the wash.
Jerry Seinfeld, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jerry Seinfeld speaking to Terry Gross in 1987.